Hello, everybody, and welcome back, or welcome for the first time. My name is Thomas, and you are listening to the Big Ideas Podcast. Thank you all for listening in once again. The date is March the 6th, 2018, and today my topic of discussion, what's really been pressing on my mind, is this concept of unity, of being human. What does it mean to be here, to be alive, to be a person, and how do we choose to value that life we're given? And I think answering this question will resolve the root of a major problem we're finding in this country, which is still been the issue of racism. And if you think that racism is dead in this country, I would encourage you to reassess your position. Now, when I jump to this issue of racism, a lot of people might instantly, their mind is set on slavery, but beyond slavery, beyond white people abusing African-American labor, there has been a deeper divide than that. And that's not where the history of American racism lies. There is a more profound sense of hierarchical status in this country that centers the white Christian American male at the top of the podium. And just to give a little bit of a description about racism in the United States, this has been a widespread issue since the colonial era. And racial policies have been implemented both legally and socially, where sanctioned privileges and rights have been given to white Americans, but denied to many other types of races, such as Native Americans, African Americans, Asian Americans, Hispanics, Latino Americans, European Americans. It seems that no matter which culture you come from, if you're not a part of what's perceived as the dominant social culture, that discrimination has always been under the guise of legality. There's always been a loophole or some form of literal structure to our society, a institutionalized form of racism, you might put it. And if you think that's gone today, if you don't think that our institutions, the way our society is run, is not fundamentally flawed in the way it discriminates against people, then we really need to challenge this notion. Because if you look at things like the prison system, for example, the prison industrial complex, here is a huge source of free labor, of abuse of predominantly African American males in what some people might call the new form of slavery. And I'm going to go further into detail just about how bad the industrial prison system is in this country, and why it's just a shame that we have the highest incarceration rate in the entire world based on our population. But it, even more fundamentally past that, it just boggles my mind that people think we've gotten to a point in human evolution where we're past all of this, where we're greater than these savage instincts to label and define and categorize people under such face value representations. It's barbaric in many senses, and we really do need to take a more critical look in how we frame our society and how we value individuals. And by and large, this value that we place on an individual, it comes out of that pull yourself up by the bootstraps mentality. And when we have a large segment of our population that is perceived as not looking after themselves, is not pulling them up themselves, we see them as failures, and it allows us to make these broader assumptions that may not necessarily be true about the nature of these people's circumstances. And I hate to broadly categorize people in that sense, but these are overarching trends that we see in our country as a result of the structure in which we live. And I don't want to get too far off topic here. I wanted to bring the discussion back to the prison industrial complex and how I feel our criminal justice system does reflect a new wave of institutionalized racism in this country, and how it sets up cultural standards for discrimination. It really is a difficult issue to talk about, coming from nowhere near close to that life, or even knowing anybody personally who's gone to prison. So just take into account that what I have to say is based on statistical findings and no real personal or anecdotal experience of my own. I'm sorry if this might be a little bit boring to you guys, but I'm going to delve into some hard facts, some hard information about where we find ourselves as a country right now in terms of our prison complex system. And the term prison industrial complex, it was sort of born out of this idea of the military industrial complex, sort of a tongue-in-cheek sort of euphemism for a very rapidly growing issue. But I'm looking at a chart here that is referencing the amount of incarcerated Americans between the years 1920 and 2008. And looking at this graph, the year 1920, we had well under 250,000 incarcerated Americans, and this really doesn't progress until much later in 1970, when 1971, President Richard Nixon declared a war on drugs. And from here, the numbers are still only around 250,000-300,000 incarcerated Americans. But over the next 38 years, up until the year 2008, we see that this graph here sharply rises at a constant rate, up until where now we're at the point we almost have 2.5 million Americans behind bars. 2.5 million Americans behind bars, and most of them are nonviolent offenders for drug crimes. And these people are being treated and put into prison camps, prison labor camps. Not per se a camp. I make it sound a lot worse than it is, but it's a way essentially to contract cheap prison labor. Construction companies, surveillance technology vendors, companies that operate prison food services and medical facilities, private probation companies, lawyers, lobby groups that represent them. The list goes on and on and on about the amount of people making money off the back of this thing. And this is a huge issue. This is a huge issue. And what I'm really seeing here is that this stemmed out of America's cultural ideology that drugs and drug abuse was somehow related to criminality, that somehow an individual's reliance on a substance was a criminal activity. And this really shattered a lot of communities, a lot of African American communities at the time. And there are quotes from Nixon's ex-advisor pointing directly to the fact that they used this rhetoric, these tactics, as a form of racial subversion. They went into these predominantly black neighborhoods where they were smoking weed, they were, you know, doing crack and shit like that, and they fucked these people up, you know? Like, goddamn, the amount of injustice that I feel for those people, the amount of injustice that I've seen done, that I've personally experienced, to the degree in which I can experience injustice as a white male in this country, around drug use, is incredulous. It boggles my mind that the government, the U.S. government, took upon themselves to create such an issue around drug use that we went from around 250,000 people behind bars to 2.5 million. That is incredible to me, and that is just that. There's no rational explanation for why this should be a case in our country. Now, if that doesn't make any sense to you either, let me try and do some research off the NAACP website and maybe try and show you how this broken system somehow made sense to somebody who was attempting to institutionalize racism once again. These numbers really speak for themselves when you look at it. In 2014, African Americans constituted 2.3 million, or 34% of the total 6.8 million correctional population. African Americans are incarcerated at more than five times the rate of whites. The imprisonment rate for African American women is twice that of white women. Nationwide, African American children represent 32% of children who are arrested, 42% of children who are detained, and 52% of children whose cases are judicially waived to criminal court. Though African Americans and Hispanics make up approximately 32% of the U.S. population, they comprised 56% of all incarcerated people. So, while there are white people locked up, while this is not just a racial issue, you know, drugs and criminality are not at their core dictated by the race somebody is. Everybody can have issues with criminality. Criminality isn't a race issue, but since criminality isn't a race issue, then why do we see such a disproportionate amount of African Americans locked up? And I know that might be a little bit of whataboutism here, but or begging the question. But I am going to beg the question. I am going to ask, why is that? Why is that the case that we see a disproportionately amount of African Americans locked up? Why is it that we see a disproportionate amount of African Americans who have committed crimes in the media? Why is it that we see on shows like Cops constantly African Americans in the back of police cars? It is the public narrative that we create, this idea that African Americans are inherently related to criminal activity. And this is a very, very powerful reinforcing factor, because it is true. It is true. In many ways, it is a self-fulfilling prophecy, because when we see these numbers, these rates, these statistics of people behind bars, it's very easy to make broad assumptions about the nature of someone's individuality under a large assumption. But you can't fall victim to making these assumptions about people, because in my perception, the way I'm looking at this right now is this was not a trend. This is a continuation of the conversation that's been taking place in this country since its very founding, and that is in institutionalized racism, in creating laws and legality and loopholes in which the white American can get by, the respected class can survive, all whilst somebody else suffers at the hand of discrimination. And it's even harder nowadays to say that it's not discrimination, because we do have a plurality of races locked up. It's not as clear as it once was, because we don't have those clear-cut social structures the same as they were back before the civil rights era. No, people did incredible work to change that, but we're not done, and we can't be complacent, because if we become complacent, look what happens. We have 2.5 million Americans locked up behind bars, and this is not the answer. This is not the direction we should be going. So where should we go? Like, what should we do here? And the answer, it does lie within the criminal justice system. And I think further than that, and how we choose to value people. You know, people make mistakes. People are raised in terrible circumstances. They get to see the worst life has to offer at ages that really warp their social perspectives. And these are deeper fundamental questions we have to keep getting at and keep asking ourselves is, well, when someone makes a mistake, do we choose not to value them any longer? And what mistakes do we choose to give power towards in punishing people? I think that, for starters, I think that the issue of drugs and criminality in this country have been nothing less than totally destructive. It's been totally destructive. It's torn apart the fabric and the psyche of honest Americans. People who struggle, who have to self-medicate, are now criminals? You're telling me that someone who has just seen so much shit in life and just wants to escape it all, and now they're going to jail because they're a bad person? You can't value people like that. And I think that's just, it's just so lame, you know? And there's worse things, there's greater things that we can protect ourselves from. And if an individual wants to make a choice to abuse a substance that is gonna negatively impact their life, that impact their health, then that is a health choice. That is a health choice. It's a health risk, and it's something that person may need help dealing with. And hell, even if you don't want to help them deal with it, they're going to have inevitable consequences outside of getting sent to jail. All you're going to do when you send them to jail is just pin them up somewhere without their drugs, where they're going to get really fucking pissed off that you pin them up without their drugs. And then what is going to happen when they come back out? The same things, the same pattern, the same cycles. We need criminal justice reform. We need different laws surrounding drugs and drug abuse, and we need that now. We need those two things now. Past that, there are people who commit crimes. There are things that go wrong that need to be punished in a way that we might need to remove those people from society. But 2.5 million Americans is too high of a number. It's too high, and it's unwarranted, unprecedented on a global scale. So something needs to change there as well. But that's not my place to discuss necessarily, because I cannot personally speak on all of those instances. I can't personally talk about all of the cases or justify why each person on that list of millions of people shouldn't be behind bars. I simply can't do that. If you'd like to see someone who's made a notable effort to try at that, just, I encourage you, go look at Obama, great president, great man, highly respected. He did a lot for African Americans that I don't think people paid attention to, and most notably was trying to release people with these insane sentences. He wanted to release them and bring them back out to the public and offer opportunity where someone might not have seen it again. And that's a beautiful thing. That is just so beautiful to me, that the president of our country, the leader of the free people, was able to look somebody in the eye whose society had previously told that they were wrong. They were wrong. They were a bad person. And he looked at them and he forgave them. And he said, "You're not a bad person. You're not a bad person." And we need to tell people that in our society more, especially those people who have done wrong. Like, that's how you value the individual, everybody. You still respect them no matter the mistakes they've made. Granted, there have been people who have made very, very fucking bad mistakes, but, you know, I'll leave that one to your discretion. I think there are more people who have made mistakes that they regret and haven't seen forgiveness or a second chance than there have been those who don't deserve it. I think we need to offer a chance. We need to offer rehabilitation. We need to think better about the ways we treat these people. who are honestly left in just shitty places in our society, and that's, it's not their fault. Most of the time, it's not their fault. You cannot choose the life you're born into. You simply have to deal with the circumstances, and if drugs and criminality are a byproduct of your circumstance, that does not speak to the criminal nature of an individual. That speaks volumes about our society and represents major issues. We need to deal with these problems. We need to fix them, and it starts with yourself yet again. Like every message I have, you can learn how to forgive people who have made mistakes. And it might be hard. It might be the hardest thing you've ever done to forgive somebody. But the feeling you have in your heart when you know that person understands that you forgive them, it's a beautiful feeling. And I encourage you, once you stop listening to this today, if there's someone in your life, a relative, a friend, a loved one who you feel made a mistake in the past and you still hold a grudge against them, I just please tell them that you forgive them for what they've done and you are their friend, or whatever way you're related to them. Just know that forgiveness is at its center what we need more of. We need more people capable of forgiving each other, because we all make mistakes. Nobody is perfect in this, and we're all struggling along together. So just make life a little better for those around you, you know? Make life better for yourself, because if you're able to forgive others, other people will forgive you. And with that being said, don't be a fucking dickhead. Don't go around pissing people the fuck off for no reason and expect them to be like, oh, hey, yeah, I forgive you. Like, no, they won't. They won't do that. You have to be honest. You have to be honest with yourself. And just know that if people really care, if people start to really choose to care, that in time and with enough respect, they will forgive you. And you have to know that when someone forgives you, you have to take that opportunity. And you have to be sincere in their offerings of forgiveness, because that is one of the greatest gifts someone can give you, is forgiveness. And I hope that you can find peace in knowing that. So thank you once again for listening in. I'm gonna cut it out here. Peace. The song you listened to today is a personal favorite of mine, Float On by Modest Mouse. If you'd like to find the song, as always, the link is in the description below the podcast. If you liked what you heard today and want to share this with a friend, feel free. Past that, make sure to get out there, share your ideas, and try and be a good person.